Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to Poodle Politics, the political podcast of the San Antonio Express News. My name is Gilbert Garcia, Metro columnist, and I'm joined by
business editor and columnist Greg Jefferson,
Brian Chasnoff, investigative reporter.
I think the big news that's happening right now in San Antonio politics revolves around the news last week, something that we'd kind of suspected was going to happen, but last week it became official that State Representative Lyle Larson will not seek another term. He's currently in his sixth term in the Texas House, a really unique elected official in that you always hear politicians talk about how they don't really see themselves as a politician, or they're not really into politics. And usually when they say that, it's not true. But Lyle Larson is somebody I actually could see enjoying just fishing on a daily basis, and would probably be just as happy, or if not happier, than what he's doing. At the same time, while I don't think that politics is the be all and end all for him, he's spent nearly 30 solid years in elected office, one elected office or another. But he's someone who I think this year particularly made it clear that he was not in step with the Republican Party that he's been a part of for his entire adult life, and was really striking out at the party over this sort of the culture war agenda that they put forward in this year's session. Now, Greg, when you look at Lyle Larson, his legacy, we don't know what he's going to do from here going forward. I mean, I think he's got some plans, but he's not ready to say anything yet. When you look at his legacy and what a kind of unique figure he's been in Republican Party politics here, I mean, what do you think about?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It feels like he's this weird figure in that he's kind of a moderate Republican who has no place in his party now. And it reminds me a lot of how conservative Democrats felt back in the day, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
They became Republicans. I think him converting to the Democratic Party, obviously, that's not going to happen. But yeah, I mean, he's an office holder completely at odds with his party. And you could just, you know, this has been building, I think, for several years now. You could just feel it, you know, in the way he talked about each successive legislative session. And so it's really not surprising. I mean, he seemed pretty unhappy to be in the legislature this last regular session and in all the subsequent special sessions. So, I mean, it's not surprising. But I'm really curious about what's next for him. I mean, you said that he's a politician who, you know, kind of the rare politician who can either take it or leave it. And I think that's true, but he's spent, you know, as you said, the past 30 years taking it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's from city council to commissioner's court to the legislature. So yeah, I'm really curious about what's next for a while.
Just to give you some sense of where what his standing is in his party. And I mean, people who listen to the podcast know that he was on with us about 3 months ago and said that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has no soul. And you look into his eyes and they're kind of dead when you look in there. And he had an insatiable, he said Dan Patrick has an insatiable lust for power and so on. But when Lyle Larson tweeted his announcement last week that he was not running for another term, Matt Rinaldi, the Texas Republican Party chair, responded with opportunity for Republicans to pick up a House seat. So that's kind of how he's seen by some of the leadership of his own party, that this is not a Republican seat with Lyle Larson in there. Brian, what stands out to you about Lyle Larson from having covered him over the years?
Yeah, I mean, he just has always struck me, you know, when I could pin him down for a comment, which was not often. He didn't seem too He didn't seem too interested in engaging with me back when I was a columnist. Call me back for some reason, but he does strike me as a refreshingly honest, a truth teller, which is something that, you know, us journalists appreciate. I remember back when we had him on the podcast, I was fishing for comments about rock quarries, because I was working on that project that recently published. And, you know, he was very straightforward about how he thought that the legislature needs to do more to, you know, regulate them because there is an imbalance there. And then I was reading in Bruce Selkrig's very well-written profile over the weekend that one of his brothers, you know, is involved in a rock quarry near San Antonio. So that just kind of underscored to me, even when he has, you know, familial reason to not comment on something like that, he can't help himself, but tell you how he really feels.
Yeah. And I think you were talking about him, you know, responding to calls and so on. And I think this is another area where he's maybe a little unique. I mean, in my experience over the years, there were times that I would call, get no response at all. Other times where he'd pick up the phone and, you know, you'd maybe talk to him for 20, 30 minutes or something. And I've talked to others who've had that similar experience. So I think he just kind of, you know, he kind of did things in his own way. And he's talking a lot about independent party movements. There's been some suggestion that he might be interested in running as an independent for lieutenant governor. He certainly pushed for his old friend, Joe Strauss, the former Texas House Speaker, to run as an independent for either governor or lieutenant governor. So I think based on what Lyle Larson said in that Bruce Selkrig piece, I think within the next month or so, we should know a little bit more. I just have to think that he's got some plans for 2022, because I think he's really just up in arms about what's happened to the Republican Party. And I think he's really kind of down on the two-party system in general. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the race to succeed him, because this is going to be, you know, these seats like this, I mean, this is we have only two solid Republican Texas House seats, and this is one of them. And they don't open up very often. So there's going to be a pretty large field to replace him. Already we know about former District Attorney Nico LaHood, who is a former Democrat, will be running as a Republican. Former Councilmember Elisa Chan, we know about former Bear County Republican Party Chair Mark DeRozio, and trucking industry executive Adam Blanchard will also be running. Brian, I had to get your thoughts, because you certainly have written a lot over the years about both Nico LaHood and Elisa Chan. What are your thoughts on the possibility of those two being? You know, there'll be others in the race, but they'll be kind of fighting it out for the nomination.
Yeah, I mean, I sure did give both of them a hard time when I was writing columns. I mean, of course, with Elisa Chan, we had the secret recording of her disparaging the LGBT community right before city council voted on the anti-discrimination bill. And of course, Elisa Chan was a councilwoman at that time. And so that, you know, she had to do some twisty maneuvering to get around that. And then with Nico, I mean, what can I say? You know, Nico is a fascinating character. He's very distinctive, famously, you know, moving from the Democratic column to Republican, which makes sense, because a lot of his views, even back when he was a Democrat, align more closely with the GOP, at least the Texas GOP. Yeah. He was dismissive of the Islamic community and so forth. And I think that, so in short, I think that they both have some baggage there.
Yeah, that's right. And he's obviously been known for his anti-vax views, and was particularly controversial for kind of using the power of his office when he was district attorney to put that out there. More recently, with the COVID-19 pandemic, he has been dismissive not only of the COVID vaccine, but also masks. I think he's referred to masks as mouth diapers or face diapers or something like that. I think
what form did he use to be dismissive of the COVID vaccine? Did he say that publicly?
Yes, he is. He has kind of a, I guess you, I don't know what you call it, a video podcast series. I'm not sure, but it's out on social media where it's called R-Rated Christianity. And he and a friend will discuss, the issue, religious issues and how they apply basically to modern society. And, a few weeks back they were talking about, saying no one in his family has taken the vaccine and he wouldn't encourage anyone to take it. And he was, just sort of mocking the idea of wearing masks and saying that the masks really don't do any good at all. And they were basically trying to pick apart the argument that masks have any, efficacy at all. So yeah, I have to think that this is going to come up. It's going to be, you know, these kinds of issues will come up. I think one interesting candidate to follow in this race is Adam Blanchard, who we don't know, you know, he's never run for office. So, he's not going to have the name recognition going in that either, LaHood or Chan would have, but, he's young, he's smart. He's, you know, he's going to make a strong argument in terms of, like, you know, making Texas have policies that are good for the business community. It's going to be a very sort of so pro-business kind of classic Republican conservatism. Already he's got, you know, people in the business community kind of lining up behind him. Don't know how that's going to translate into votes in a primary, but I think he's going to be a candidate. He doesn't have the baggage that the others have. I think that's going to be interesting to watch. I wanted to move from that into talking a little bit about Governor Greg Abbott and his executive order last week, which mandated that businesses cannot mandate vaccination for their employees. It was an anti-mandate mandate from the governor. And this is, you know, kind of the latest in a series of moves he's made to sort of pander or placate, you know, the base of his party. He's got a primary opponent, Don Huffines, who's been kind of pushing him to do more on this issue against vaccine and mask mandates. But, you know, in this case, and the legislature is moving forward with a bill because this is what he asked them to do. But Greg, you know, it seems that the business community in Texas, there have already been several businesses who've signed on to a statement denouncing the bill that the legislature is considering, which would really is just an extension of what the governor signed last week. And I just want to get your thoughts as, you know, as business editor, when you look at something like this, because this is not protecting the rights of free enterprise or protecting the rights of businesses, as he's often, Governor Abbott has often claimed that's what he's wanting to do. In this case, he's dictating to them.
Yeah. And this is just, I mean, clearly this is naked politics. I mean, this is pretty craven. I mean, he's co-opting Don Huffines, who came out the day of, or at least very soon after, Abbott's announcement of the mandate last week, claiming victory, and he deserved it. He did. I mean, it was clearly in, you know, Abbott's mandate was clearly in response to Huffines. However, I mean, you know, you've got a real problem in Texas, especially for companies that operate here, have large operations here, but aren't based here. I mean, you've got national, you know, Fortune 500 companies at work in Texas, mm-hmm. who have mandates from headquarters to, you know, yeah, vaccines are mandatory for employees. So this puts them at odds with what they're doing nationally and multinationally. It depends, you know, on the size of the company, like American Airlines, United Airlines. So yeah, I mean, like, clearly this is a departure that we've kind of seen in the works for a while now. I mean, the Texas Republican Party, you know, it's not the party of big business the way it was. I mean, the Texas model the ingredient for the supposed, you know, Texas miracle of seemingly endless job creation was just a very light regulatory touch, low taxation, and no mandates. And when it comes, you know, when the governor thinks that his reelection might be at stake, that he might not make it out of the Republican Party or the Republican primary in 2022, mm-hmm. That tradition of the state Republican Party, just he's more than happy to jettison it. And, you know, yep. mandate against mandates.
Well, you know, what's been fascinating about this is you've seen, for example, you know, Southwest Airlines imposed a vaccine mandate for mm-hmm. their employees. And you had Congressman Chip Roy, whose district includes, you know, part of San Antonio, was just bashing Southwest Airlines and actually hoping, you know, rooting for their failure, you know, and it was kind of taking, mm-hmm. you know, just, he was basically saying to people, let's just bring it all down if they're going to try to infringe on your freedoms. And Ted Cruz was also, you know, bashing Southwest Airlines. You've seen Ted Cruz supporting someone who got fired from ESPN over the vaccine or their vaccine mandate. And so you're really seeing more and more, I think, leading Republicans attacking businesses and actually rooting for them to fail as a way to punish them for mandating vaccines.
Look, the thing is you can't embrace hard right populism and placate big business at the same time. You can do it for a while, right? Yeah. I mean, you can play it being the populist, but eventually you will be taken over by the grassroots. And that's really what's happened to the Republican Party now. And, you know, whatever close relationship you had with big business, that's going to go away. And I think we're seeing a state Republican Party in the process of kind of divesting itself from, you know, big business in Texas.
The thing that's maddening to me about this is obviously we've seen an anti-vax movement grow nationally over the past, you know, 20 years or so. And it's been based on research that the medical community has debunked many times. But putting that aside, all of us who've grown up in this state, and I think it's probably pretty common in other states too, we all grew up with the understanding that if we wanted to go enroll in school, if we wanted to go to class, we had to receive certain vaccines. It was just understood. It wasn't questioned. We all accepted the idea of vaccine mandates as just something that was needed. We had to take the polio vaccine. We had to take, you know, measles, chickenpox, and hepatitis B, and so on. These are state requirements, and the idea of a vaccine mandate is nothing new, and we accepted it for our kids to provide some sort of collective reciprocal protection. We were protecting our kids, and if everyone was participating in this, they were protecting each other. And for some reason now, when we have the worst pandemic of the past 100 years, and we have a vaccine that's really our only serious protection against that, from the serious symptoms of that, you would think people who grew up understanding that they had to get vaccinated as kids, their kids had to get vaccinated. In this case, you would think it wouldn't even be a question when we're dealing with something to protect us from this pandemic, which has disrupted our lives for the last year and a half. But now suddenly we're acting as if the concept of a vaccine mandate is something new, and it's this tyrannical government overreach. And I'm just kind of bewildered by it. I mean, Brian, I was just curious what your thoughts are on this, because this is nothing new.
Well, it's even more puzzling when you think about how it was President Trump who was largely responsible for the fruits of Operation Warp Speed.
Exactly.
He was championing all through 2020, you know, that was their major push, was to create these life-saving vaccines. And then suddenly you see this, you know, you remember when after Trump lost re-election, he was he was not interested in promoting mm-hmm. his own vaccination when he got it.
That's right.
And you know, to me, it feels like an extension of anti-government, you know, vestige of the Tea Party sentiment, just, you know, hating any government mandate whatsoever. Right.
Operation Warp Speed, you know, thank God for it. But I mean, if you go back, I mean, think about the political context of Operation Warp Speed. I mean, that was, you know, Trump threw his weight behind it because it was better in his mind to do that than to, at the time, embrace, you know, government shutdowns, mask mandates, all kinds of stuff that was going on at the state and local level early in the pandemic to try to stop this thing. For him, it was just much easier to take the vax route. Like, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean he was ultimately going to buy into it. For him, it was strategic. I really believe that. It was like, you know, it was the appearance of action in the face of a lot of inaction on his part.
Yeah. And you know, we're part of this whole anti-vax thing, and really part of the Republican dogma over the past year, or since Trump left office, has been, you know, pushing, you know, therapeutic treatments for people who get hospitalized with COVID. And that's fine. But to simultaneously be encouraging vaccine resistance when, you know, the vaccine, based on the data that we're seeing, has a really good chance of keeping you out of the hospital if you get COVID. And why would you prefer to say, I'm going to get it and take the chance that I'm going to be hospitalized and then try to get, you know, treatment when I'm in the hospital?
I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the warping effect of social media on sure. all this. I mean, there's so many people who are getting just straight up mis and disinformation about the vaccine.
Absolutely.
And they believe it because they don't have any, they don't follow. So, you know, there's a large portion of America that does not follow any legitimate news source. So,
yeah, no, that's absolutely right.
In fact, you're already seeing on Twitter this morning, General Colin Powell, who passed away from complications related to COVID. I mean, you know, he was, you know, his immune system was compromised. And, you know, he was battling cancer and, you know, he succumbed to COVID. You're already seeing anti-vaxxers say, look, this is yet, you know, more evidence that this just does not work. I mean, everything we've done over the last year and a half has been for naught.
Yeah, that's not how science works, but okay.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap things up, I wanted to talk a little bit about, we mentioned the culture war agenda that the GOP in Texas has pushed over this legislative, or the series of legislative sessions we've had in 2021. And one of them has been something that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was advocating for from the beginning of the year, and it's finally passed legislature during the special session, which is it's a bill banning transgender kids from participating in school sports that align with their gender identity. So, for example, a transgender high school girl could not compete in girls track and field. One of the things that has come up, and this is another issue on which we've seen the business community in Texas try to urge lawmakers not to go forward with this, but they haven't listened. And with this, you've got something that there has really been, when this has been questioned, no one has really presented any evidence or examples where this has even really come up in Texas, where there has been any problem or issue in sports in Texas. I think there've been very, very few incidents nationally, but Greg, when you look at this, is this just another case of just trying to feed the base more red meat for the base?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is Dan Patrick looking at his list of potential scapegoat targets, mm-hmm. and coming to the conclusion, it's like, okay, there may be only two groups left I can just nakedly scapegoat: undocumented workers and transsexual Texans. That's all this is about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not addressing not even a perception of a problem. Nobody says there's a problem with, you know, high school sports competition among transsexuals. It's a non-issue. And for the lieutenant governor to raise it as he has, I mean, it's very clear he's feeding as much red meat as he can to the base. And, you know, unfortunately, transsexual teens are the victims in this case.
You know, and one of the things that's been fascinating about this has been the way advocates of this legislation in Texas and in other states, because a few other states have similar have passed similar bills, is the way it's been framed as almost like a pro-feminist sort of move. Like, we're really advocating for women's and girls' sports, and we just don't, you know, we really want to see, you know, women in sports succeed, and it's just really unfair for women to have to compete against transgender individuals. So it's been framed as this kind of very kind of, you know, solidarity with women sort of thing, and which is, it's been a little bit strange. But I have found, you know, I wrote about this issue in January or February when Dan Patrick first talked about it. And I found that, you know, I'd have parents saying, well, you know, what about our girls who are competing in sports, and they're going, this is not fair to them. And again, it really is not, it really hasn't been an issue, but it's just, Dan Patrick, I think, realizes that, that if you frame it a certain way, it will resonate with, a part of the Texas populace. I mean, it does, because I found that, and it continually gets framed as, you know, this is unfair to girls competing in sports. It's really hard. It's really hard to sort of rebut that it's I think it's an absurd argument, but it's really hard to rebut that. And you know, the result of it is that you have transgender kids who have so many challenges already to deal with, they're really being marginalized here and scapegoated and really excluded from participation in something. You know, if there are instances where transgender kids want to participate in sports, they're really being excluded and told there's no place for you at all.
Well, I mean, it kind of reminds me of the issue that came up in the you know, governor's the primary, upcoming primary election for governor with, mm-hmm. wasn't it Huffines who claimed credit for, you know, getting the governor to remove a page on a state website that offered suicide prevention services to, the LGBT community and,
right. That's right.
You know, transgender kids. It's just, you know, it's just this issue that the far right in Texas can hammer on repeatedly, you know, to score points with their own base, you know, but at what cost? You know, I mean, this is, there's these kids are really, really suffering, and there's not a lot of compassion for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that note, I mean, I think getting back to what we talked about at the beginning with Lyle Larson, there's clearly, I think, a lot of frustration in the state. And certainly there's, I think, a national perception, which is, not unwarranted that Texas has kind of gone off the deep end politically. It's not completely a new phenomenon, but certainly this session has been a really extreme example of that. So, you know, we're heading into an election cycle, and I think that, you know, all these things are going to be litigated, and I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. For everyone listening in, we really appreciate it. Hope everyone's doing well, and we'll be back next week. Take care.